From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The biggest holder of Bitcoin in the world. You know who that is?
Who?
The largest holder of Bitcoin in the world, I read, is the U.S. government.
Wow. Yeah, I believe it. They've been auctioning
more Bitcoin than any other group or company or anything in the world. And that's because of all the seizures that they've done over the last few years.
Let's look this up right now. Well, welcome back, everyone, to another exciting episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Charlie Schrem. I'm honored to have with me Andrew Kugel. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Someone needs to do a podcast in the crypto world. Maybe we can do this too, because on a day-to-day basis, Andrew, you and I are like discussing different deals in a space. There's a lot of VC firms going on. There's different projects. There's fundraising constantly. But a lot of people like don't even know how to like pitch or like what VCs are looking for or how to like get a company. And you see like so many different things. That could be like a Shark Tank, but podcast style instead of like video.
Totally. And, you know, there's always the debate between VC money and public money, right? And I've always been the public market guy, right? For 20 years, I was a banker and raised a lot of money. There's a whole public market VC thing here. You need to be of a little bit of size, but you can do CPCs up here. That's how we took Hut 8 public. That's how we took Galaxy Digital, Mike Novogratz's company public, right? There's a market up here.
You're the CEO of tokens.com and you're the CEO of Hut 8 Mining. There's a lot going on in the crypto world today. We have a lot that we're going to talk about, but what's on your mind? Where should we start off?
Why don't we talk about this Grayscale BTC application for ETF and the SEC ruling that just happened? I think that's super interesting for a number of reasons, but what's your take on that?
There's going to be an ETF that goes through. BlackRock filed for that Bitcoin one, and there'll be other ones. What I'm worried about with the Grayscale one is that it's already kind of mired in too much blood, as you say.
Right.
I remember the old story of like King Saul asking God if he can build a temple. And he said, sorry, your son will build it because you already have too much blood on your hands. These same stories repeat over and over again. I think it was like King Arthur saying, I want to unite England, or one of the later kings. I forget which one it was.
Right.
And he's like, no, you can't do it because you've too much blood on your hands. So Grayscale, unfortunately, there's too much like negativity and lawsuits and things going on. I don't really know what's going to happen there.
It's tough because, it's inevitable. The SEC, I'm told, the leadership there hates Barry Silbert. You've got Genesis mired in a bankruptcy proceeding where a bunch of people are pissed off, including, you know, the guys at, you know, Gemini. And, you know, there's a lot of toxic energy going back and forth. I think they'll try and get anybody else other than Grayscale to be the first approved.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting, when BlackRock made their application, did you see who they wanted to appoint as their custodian?
It was Coinbase. Yeah, so that's the crazy thing.
That's a big fuck you to the SEC as well, because the SEC and Coinbase are also in litigation,
that's
right?
That's the craziest thing. It's like, it's on purpose. It seems like the Bitcoiners that used to need to fight for the right to be in the institutional space took a step back. And BlackRock and the rest of the world and Coinbase and all these different companies are kind of like working together to force the courts to decide, because they realize that that's where it's going to happen. It's going to happen in the courts, because in America, the courts supersede even our executive.
Right. And the SEC has had a few embarrassing losses recently, right? I mean, there was the XRP, there was a Grayscale, there's been a couple of other ones, but they can't keep hiding. But interestingly, they lost the decision on Grayscale that the courts ruled against the SEC, but then they punted it into October rather than coming in with a ruling and allowing it to happen. They punted it. And I wonder if this is a delay tactic to approve everybody else ahead of Grayscale.
It could be. And I'm not a regulatory expert or a crypto lawyer by any means, but I've been through so many, you know, my whole history with my legal situation in the early days of Bitcoin. I've had to read a lot of legal memos and letters and things like that. So I'm reading these and I try to read between the lines of when you, the best information you can get is when you read the minutes of what the judge actually said. So I've been reading a lot of like what the judge's notes are and what their comments are on the Ripple case and on the SEC case. And what I'm getting is like what the judges are doing, it seems to me, is that they're a little bit frustrated because they're not trying to like create new regulations, the courts, but rather they're almost like saying to they're almost keep, like you said, punting it back to the different regulatory bodies and governmental organizations and saying, hey, it's you guys, I have to rule this way because you guys haven't created any new rules for these crypto companies ever. So here you are trying to like tie it to old regulations and us as the courts, we don't think you can do that. So they're going back and I'm hopefully they're just like punting it.
Here's a law from 1910 regarding cow trading and we're going to apply it to cryptocurrencies because that's the closest thing we have, right?
It's kind of,
I don't know if you can verify this. I read this a little while ago and it surprised me. The biggest holder of Bitcoin in the world, you know who that is?
Who?
The largest holder of Bitcoin in the world, I read, is the U.S. government.
Wow. Yeah, I believe it. They've been auctioning
more Bitcoin than any other group or company or anything in the world. And that's because of all the seizures that they've done over the last few years.
Let's look this up right now. Yeah, this is actually true.
I'm told they own 1% of the total. I'm looking here at some of my notes. They own over 200,000 Bitcoin. It's approximately just over 1% of the total Bitcoin outstanding. That's pretty bananas when you think about it, right? I mean, it's still 1%, but if Bitcoin ends up going up to like $1 million, that's going to be quite a windfall for the government if they're still holding it and if they can dispose of it.
This is actually crazy. We all thought the U.S. would buy Bitcoin on the market, but actually they just used their seized Bitcoin to become like largest holders.
Yeah. So did you pull it up? You got the same
information? Yeah, I'm reading this article right now.
Yeah. I think that would be shocking to most people if they knew that the largest holder of Bitcoin in the world is the U.S. government.
That's so crazy. I'm reading this article now. I'm going to post it on my Twitter so people can check it out. So there is a case to be made that now that the U.S. and some other countries in the world own such a huge amount of Bitcoin, and the U.S. has been seen as like, the U.S. kind of looks at Europe and the rest of the world and says, hey, you guys can do whatever regulations you want. But dollars are the king, and dollars always go through the U.S. banking system. So therefore, our regulations matter the most. So they're going to be the biggest holders, define the regulations for Bitcoin, and maybe even the rest of crypto. I mean, it's kind of crazy how they did it pretty quickly in less than 15 years.
You know, who knows if it's been deliberate or not, right? I mean, this could just be a whole bunch of various groups acting independently and get you here. But, you know, at some point, the U.S. government is going to have to decide what they want to do with that. Like, you know what would be really interesting? So you know how lots of countries hold gold as a reserve against the currency, right? I mean, if you go back 100 years ago, everybody had some kind of a precious metal or gold secured against their fiat currency.
Oh, yeah.
And it was only after the First World War that, you know, in Europe, during the First World War, they realized they didn't have enough gold to back the currency. So they went off the gold standard, but they said, we'll make ourselves convertible into the U.S. dollar. And the U.S. backs all the currency by gold, so we're okay. As long as we're convertible to U.S. dollars and they keep a gold reserve, we're good. Not Fort Knox. The FX, I also read this, the FX business, so money trading, is actually the largest industry in the world. It is the largest thing going on business-wise is FX trading. In 72, Nixon took the U.S. off the gold standard to basically say, okay, we also don't want to keep the amount of gold behind, you know, backed by our dollars,
sure.
Went off the gold standard. And since then, you really just have seen inflation kind of doing this, right? It's been shown through historically that if your dollar isn't backed by something, and especially if you can keep printing it and there's no boundaries to it, your inflation rate's just going to continue to go up, which is exactly where not just the US, but most of the world is today.
And it happens slowly. The dollar as like a long-term store value, the dollar's still the king, and everyone was listening as like, no, and that's not what I'm saying. It's like, it was 20 years ago, or even longer than that, but when I grew up, and it was seen more of like a store of value that didn't inflate over time. And I know the 70s had their rapid hyperinflation time. And there's a wonder why real estate has been constantly going up with the rise of inflation of the world's currencies. It's just because, unfortunately, real estate shouldn't be a speculative investment, but people are now not just looking at it as their home to live in, but they're looking at more so than they ever did as a long-term store of value. Like the rest of the world, the dollar, it's like trauma. It'll never go away. The feeling and the knowledge of going through a time when prices inflate so much. Ask any Venezuelan, any Argentinian, any Cypriot, any Eastern European for that sense, like any country, before they were on the euro, shit, like most of the world has inflating currencies all the time. And there's a wonder why their luxury property markets just continue to rise too.
I think that's well said. And back to the original point here, if the US is the largest holder of Bitcoin in the world, I wonder if there's a way, if somebody in there is sort of smart enough to say, what if we were to make, alongside with the gold, we throw the Bitcoin we own in there and yeah. We use that as part of what there is to support the backing of fiat, our fiat currency, the US dollar.
That's a good point. There's a knowledge now that the US government is holding so much of Bitcoin, and if they become positive on the regulation around it, all that Bitcoin that they own will be worth so much more because the rest of the world will start buying Bitcoin up. There'll be ETFs, so it'll be easy, BlackRock institutional way for every farmer in the world to buy Bitcoin, even if they, it'll just be like crazy. And now you're right. It'll just, and why? Because Bitcoin has no holding cost.
Right.
There's no cost to hold Bitcoin, to send Bitcoin, to transfer. It's a ledger that's all over the world that's maintained on everyone's computers in real time. And it's actually a very beautiful thing.
The whole idea of Bitcoin is just genius. But the fact that it's capped, right? Like, there's not more Bitcoin being, after the 21 million, there's no more Bitcoin being done. That is what will eventually create the value. Like, I think with anything, if you have a scarce amount of something whose demand continues to grow over time, the value of that object is going to appreciate.
Yep.
And that's why I think everybody's really excited for these ETFs to come out, because it's like, okay, you're going to have this brand new massive audience of, retail and institutions in the US that are just going to pour billions. I know when they did the ETFs in Canada a couple of years ago, within a week, there was a few billion dollars dumped into spot ETFs. Yeah. Immediately was huge. If the US, the size of the US approves a Bitcoin ETF, and again, you never know, things always behave in ways that are unexpected and things that you don't see. But theoretically, I think you'd have $1 trillion of demand going into these ETFs within the first month. Everybody's going to want to own a piece of it. If you can own it easily in the US, everyone's going to want a piece in their portfolio, which means there's going to be a massive demand buying.
No doubt in my mind, but people are going to want to buy as much Bitcoin on the market as they can as well. So you're going to see like the crazy demand on both sides.
Yeah.
Like, and you're going to see the ETFs, like they're going to have to buy Bitcoin, Coinbase. The reason they all chose Coinbase is that Coinbase's spot US trading is largely, it's like gated. So to deposit crypto on Coinbase, to deposit fiat on Coinbase, you need to go through like KYC and then the accreditation for higher levels. Right. And there's institutional, it's very easy to have like paperwork between government regulatory offices in Coinbase, to like go back and forth. There's rules, and rightly so. Yeah, I definitely am bullish on that. We talked about like AI and Bitcoin and crypto. The same companies that made all of the chips for Bitcoin mining, for GPU mining, the same companies that made the ASIC supply chains in the beginning, because as I understood, ASIC miners, you needed to build out the whole supply chain. I forgot what my friend, the term he used, but it doesn't matter. We were talking in TSMC pretty much along with NVIDIA.
If the news is correct,
and
right?
Google, and they and all the chips, they're all, it's all like one company.
In the world what's going on there? Almost a monopoly on the manufacture of these chips. And man, it's in the heart of one of the most volatile places in the world. Like it's, you got North Korea, you got China trying to take over, you get, it's in Taiwan. But, you're in a fairly volatile part of the world with a lot of threats, yet a whole bunch of the computing power is for the world and what's powering AI comes out of there. I think that's a scary thought for a lot of companies and for people in, innovators.
The biggest fear right now, I think from a US perspective, is not even like Ukraine. I think like the biggest fear is China invading Taiwan. And whenever you read the Wall Street Journal or Bloomberg, where it's like a market-based, the people reading this need to understand where the tensions are at. The end of the articles are always like, the US doesn't believe that China can invade Taiwan at this time. And that's always like a big thing, because if markets today woke up and thought that an invasion of Taiwan was imminent, dude, the U.S. stock market would just, it would tank. It would just go, I don't even know. It's a very scary thought.
U.S.-China relationship is deteriorating. I mean, you've seen the Apple news where they're banning, Apple phones and stuff in China. Like, it's continuing to escalate. And then, you got Taiwan. It's frightening to know what's happening. You've got China have all these, military boats and stuff circling the island, and military exercises and things, really just shows of strength. At some point, whatever government is elected in 2024 in the U.S., you're going to have to address that problem. That's got to be one of your top international priorities.
When did it change is my question. I had a Facebook memory the other day, and I had a picture of me in China with my friends. And I was like, huh. And I remember I went to China in 2011, in the early days of Bitcoin. I went to Macau, Hong Kong, mainland China, had the best time. Felt so welcome, never felt an inkling. Like the Chinese government at the time and the American, everything was great. It was just so great. And I was so excited to go back. What changed in 13 years?
I have a view, although I think it'd be controversial. I'll say it anyways. I think that China has spent a lot of the last while investing, especially in places
the Belt
like
and Road Initiative,
and things like roads and infrastructure. Whereas the U.S. government, and I could be wrong, I'm Canadian, but it seems like there's been a lot of promotion about regime changes, become much more political. And so countries are starting to pick sides. Like, are you on the U.S. side or are you on the China side, right? I think there's some diplomacy that needs to improve between the U.S. and how it's perceived in the world. Like, people want to see the U.S. fail right now. That's what BRICS is like. Argentina and Saudi Arabia just joined BRICS, along with another 15 countries or something. Like, the world wants to see the U.S. lose, and that's a narrative that needs to change. And I think it needs to change with the U.S. going on saying, let us help you build bridges and infrastructure. Let us be constructive here instead of,
So what you're saying is, if I understand you correctly, is that sides are being taken when sides didn't need to be taken over the last 13 years. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So, and that's very unfortunate. And you're right. I do feel that. I feel like I saw China was investing in the Belt and Road Initiative, which is investing in all these countries in Africa and giving them money. But that money was fueled by debt that China actually can't pay back right now anyways. So they were putting a lot of that under the guise of, some people would say, creating forward military bases in those countries too. But then it created this it put India in a position, because India is the world's largest democracy. It's probably the most underrated country in the world right now. It's a beautiful place, super smart people. Everyone's coming out of poverty at a very fast pace. And now India is being forced to take a side too. And that's very unfortunate at the same time, because they're in that area. And that's what scares me the most.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't believe China's doing this for altruistic reasons. I think there's motivation there, and it's political and it's military. Certainly things to keep an eye on, but maybe these are all things that end up, back to think, maybe these are all things that end up driving up the value of Bitcoin. I think gold has not really done much recently. Again, here's an opportunity for the U.S. be a leader on regulation. You're the largest holder of Bitcoin in the world. Why don't we get this moving and then provide a store of value to people that is properly regulated, and stop with this nonsense of anti-cryptocurrency movement that's, real popular with certain politicians, right?
But every politician now has a son or a daughter who's doing something in Bitcoin or crypto. So that's the beautiful thing. Even though they're very old, they got kids and grandkids who are like, Grandpa, why are you so anti-Bitcoin? Or grandma.
Right. Except for Elizabeth Warren. Yeah. Elizabeth Warren hates crypto.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's actually comical listening to her, but that's another story.
That is another story. I want to like cap off the episode because you're very heavily in the metaverse and AI world and in the NFT world. We were just talking about a company earlier that like uses gaming platforms and NFTs to do some really cool things. Our fund has made like 14 investments since May 2022. So I'm very bullish on these various like sub industries in the crypto and Bitcoin industry. Why are you so bullish? Like what's going on there?
So we talked about it before. There's what I would call a changing of the guard on the demographics front. I think the Gen Zs and the Alphas are soon to become the largest cohort in the world, the largest consumer in the world, and make up about 50% of the workforce. I read reports by like Citibank and Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan. You know, everybody's predicting Web3 gaming to go up from like a few million users to like 100 million plus in the next couple of years. I'm looking at the various points of information that are out there and saying it sort of seems inevitable that the tokenization of everything is coming, the gamification of, you know, using Web3, it's coming. That's why I'm big on it. I'm really just following the information and the arrows are all pointing in the same direction.
It's so true. And how has the definition of NFT changed from 2021 till now, 2023, in your opinion? Because most people in the world still look at them as like...
That's an excellent question because a lot of people still equate NFTs to sort of, cartoon graphics or JPEGs, whatever. Sometimes I think there's legitimacy behind some of those in terms of them being limited in numbers and having certain pieces that are you can equate to art. But what NFT technology really provides, and this is quite amazing, is its provenance, which is the origination history, the buying and selling history of a product, that the amounts it's been sold for and to who. That's going to be really valuable for things like, I think we've mentioned before, like concert tickets. Yep. The ability to have a concert ticket where an amount of money continues to go. You can create royalties off NFT technology. That's really wild.
People are really excited
and
about that.
I think there's going to be, you've heard of Soul NFTs?
No, what is it?
I've seen them spelled both ways, S-O-L-E or S-O-U-L. And it's a non-transferable NFT. So you can never sell it. You can never trade it. It sits on the blockchain on your wallet. Can never move.
Oh, soulbound
NFTs.
Like,
okay, what good is this? What if it's a degree? What if you could move and say, okay, I didn't graduate from anywhere cool, but if you graduated from Harvard or Cambridge or something like that, instead of getting a diploma that sits on your wall, which is cool, what if you got a Soul NFT? And then when you're applying for a job or you need verification, someone says, prove to me you went there. You're like, great, here's my little like verification Soul NFT of my graduate diploma from the school. It could be health records because they can be amended slightly. So you can have things like your health record or if you have allergies or whatever.
Oh, this is so cool.
You go with it, get to the hospital. You scan your barcode, here's all the stuff this guy has.
What type of issues still need to be resolved before this could become mainstream? Because this is a really cool, we invested in a company that's doing like called Meta Intro, that's doing degrees on the blockchain. So I'm actually in job wallet. So I'm going to send them this message. That's so cool.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just capital and more innovators, right? Like, look, guys like you and I, we come across great ideas every day. It's just a function of where are you going to focus your time and energy and how much capital is available. And of course, those things are always in short demand, right? Or in high demand.
So like the issuer of the soulbound NFT for degrees, that could be a really good business in itself. So I'm like, well, someone's listening to this show. If you have a relationship with like universities and you can get universities to like allow you to issue a soulbound NFT, where to that person's verified wallet, right? And it has to be some sort of like what's a verified address, like Ethereum address? You almost have to like connect it to like a verified Coinbase.
So the technology is that Soul NFTs exist, but not just community colleges, high school, whatever. Anything that needs verification that is unique to you, you could create a wallet that's like almost like a resume, right?
Yeah. You can even make them write in real time. So like the NFT lands in someone's wallet, but it's constantly being written to. So you can also assign value to it. Like it could be a soulbound NFT could be someone's paycheck. You send them the NFT and then now they're entitled to like a certain revenue share that's going to continuously pay out.
Yeah.
And then it could be like, there's a lot of use cases for NFTs that can't be sold or transferred or anything.
There's tons of stuff we haven't even thought of yet because we talk about Soul NFTs and stuff. There's probably a bunch of listeners out there in your audience that are like, oh my gosh, I just got a great idea. And it's something we haven't even imagined yet.
You're so right. The beauty of it, listeners of this show actually end up doing the really good ideas. And if they're nice, they'll give us equity in it. But they won't, I'm joking.
Yes. You can reach me at contact@tokens.com.
No, but we both, you know, work with VC funds and things like that. I think three out of the 14 that we invested in our fund were guests of this show that I was doing an episode and I had no idea they had ever existed. And the episode ends up becoming the pitch, but they're not trying. But they end up pitching to like the listeners, and the listeners are like, oh, this is really cool. And then we end up like checking this company out and it works out. That's like how it's been happening over the last kind of year and a half. So that's like a natural feeder. The listeners are like kind of controlling what we're investing in.
You're in a great position because number one, you're very smart. You've seen everything. You're sort of an OG in the space. For Web3 blockchain stuff, you're a great evaluator of good products versus not so good. So
I just have to be nicer about it.
That's something you should look into for yourself. And we talked about it earlier. Create online pitch competition. Here's what I thought of. Because I always said MBAs are kind of crap, the business degrees. The business degree should be your application is a business idea. You spend 12 months figuring out how to become an entrepreneur. And at the end, there's a competition where you have some big bank, Wells Fargo or JP Morgan, puts up 50 grand. You have a host of judges like you and I. And then the best business idea gets the prize money at the end to go start the business. That's what real business education should be.
I love this idea. I think I have a great idea for it, and I want to actually do it. So I don't want to tell any of the listeners the idea, but I have a great idea for another podcast that we could do. But Andrew, thanks so much for coming on the show today and doing another episode. We covered a lot.
Yeah, thank you. Listen, I've enjoyed the conversations, and I've enjoyed that over the last few years that we've maintained our friendship. So with a lot of gratitude to you for what you're doing and for having me on.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
I know how to run a hair salon, but for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. She's a small business owner too, so she knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.